Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text Number 14. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. The highways, margas, the subways, the lanes, the markets, and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed, samarjita, and then moistened with scented water, ganda jalar. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers, and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. Purport, scented waters prepared by distilling flowers like rose and kaora were requisitioned to wet the roads, streets, and lanes of Dwarka Dham. Such places, along with the marketplace and public meeting places, were thoroughly cleansed. From the above description, it appears that the city of Dwarka Dham was considerably big, containing many highways, streets, and public meeting places with parks, gardens, and reservoirs of water, all nicely decorated with flowers and fruits. And to welcome the Lord, such flowers and fruits with unbroken seeds of grain were also strewn over the public places. Unbroken seeds of grain or fruits in the seedling stage were considered auspicious, and thus they are still so used by the Hindus in general on festival days. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Purushtai Budhai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminte Namane Namaste Sarasatun Deve Kauravani Vajarne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sitarne. This description of Dwarka Dham. From this description of Dwarka Dham, it doesn't appear that they were living in some primeval or barbaric village somewhere. People are sometimes afraid that if the Krishna consciousness movement becomes prominent, then the civilization will degrade back into some barbaric civilization or lack of civilization where people live in a very primitive lifestyle. Because people are thinking that now modern society is very advanced in many ways. Within the last maybe 50 years, 60 years, they've created highway systems everywhere. They have now airports everywhere. They have big buildings everywhere. And this is more or less the mark of their civilization. But here we find that even in Dwarka Dham, some 5,000 years ago, there are also Mahamargas. There are big roads. I once saw a picture of Calcutta in the beginning of the 20th century, late 19th century. And there, Calcutta used to be the jewel of the British kingdom, Commonwealth, or whatever it was called, empire. And there you could see fairly big buildings and very huge roads, very big streets. And on these huge streets, there were one or two horse and carriages. Everything was very spacious. People were just strolling along. There didn't appear to be any air pollution. No one appeared to be in anxiety. It seemed like very calm and peaceful. And this was a big city, Calcutta. And now, if you go to Calcutta, everything looks like it's either under construction or being torn down. Mostly looks like everything is being torn down. All the sidewalks look like someone had taken a jackhammer and worked through the sidewalk systematically throughout Calcutta for the last 20 years. And everywhere there are, like in Delhi, they have, or many cities around the world now, Every day they have a pollution report, whether it's dangerous to go outside or not. And they have so many different chemicals in the air that they have to give a report on the different types of chemicals that are now floating in the air and how carcinogenic they are. So these problems weren't there even in Calcutta 100 years ago. What to speak of Dwarkadham 5,000 years ago. But still there it says here, Prabhupada translates Ratya, subways. They've been working in Delhi, I think, for the last 30 years trying to build a subway. I don't think they've made any progress. But here we find that even in Dwarkadham, there were subways. We can imagine that the subways probably had prasadam stands, deities, probably incense and flowers. I doubt whether they had mechanical cars. Probably exactly what the subway means. Maybe something a little bit underneath the ground. But the whole atmosphere of even a big city such as Dwarka was very natural and peaceful. And similarly, the articles that are being glorified are not the skyscrapers or the cars. Just like Ravana, who was practically ruling a good part of the universe, he also had his vehicle, Pushparat. So the Pushparat was made out of flowers. If you hit a flat tire, then you jump out and get a rose or something and repair the tire. Pushparat, made out of flowers. But this Pushparat was such that simply by desiring, wherever you wanted to go, it would take you there, just by your desire. There's no instance where the Pushparat collided into another car or it ran out of gas or had some mechanical failure. One of the flowers wilted and crashed. No, this rats, or even in the Vedic culture, there is vimanas. They simply move by the desire of the driver. And the Pushparat, for instance, was such, which was originally the car of Kuvera, that as many people wanted to sit in it, they could sit there. Therefore, when Lord Ramachandra and Sita wanted to go back to Ayodhya, they sat on the car, all the monkey warriors sat on the car, and the followers of Vibhishan sat on the car. Warriors headed by Jambavan sat on the car. So there are millions of warriors on the car, and there's plenty of room. Wasn't they? We're all crowded, and everyone sat in the back seat except for Lord Ramachandra and Sita. They sat on the front seat. They had a little room. 3 million people in the back seat and two. No, everything was very spacious and roomy. And they immediately wound up in Ayodhya after pleasantly passing through all the different hermitages and the forests and the lakes and the rivers of Jambadweep at that time. So similarly, everything here was very auspicious, very roomy, pure air, pure water. And what's being glorified as being most auspicious is things like Ankarai Pushpa Pala, fruits and flowers and unbroken grains. It is said that in Satyuga, the fruit was so nice that it was all juice and hardly any, there was only a very tiny little seed and a very thin skin. And it is said that in certain parts of Jambudweep, even now, that there are mountains. And on the mountains there are trees which have, like there's a mango tree, which has fruits the size of elephants. And also there are blackberry trees, and there are rose apple trees, quite large. So when these fruits, they fall down on the ground, they form into rivers, rivers of mango juice. And when the mango juice river interacts with the sand and the sun on certain parts of Jambudvipa, it forms gold. And the demigods come there, and during their sporting, they collect the gold for their ornaments. So such is the natural ingredients within the universe. Now, of course, everything has become very scarce, and people are much more interested in what is the latest car, what is the latest computer, what is the latest gadget, mechanical gadget, and people are very proud of these things. But here in the Vedic culture, people were proud of their fruits and their flowers that made everything smell very nice, that was very tasty, created a nice atmosphere. So these were the qualities of the Vedic culture, because by creating a nice atmosphere, by providing for a healthy body, then people would be able to appreciate higher sentiments and would be able to come to a higher platform of consciousness. So the whole civilization that's defined here is a civilization aiming at higher consciousness. And the civilization, present civilization, in contrast, is aimless in its direction. And because it's aimless, therefore they accept anything. Whether a person is selling drugs on the street, or a person is distributing a Bhakti Godhead, or a transcendental literature, they're all considered by modern people to be more or less the same. Maybe they're a little suspicious about this person selling God-conscious literature on the street. Just like there's one country in Europe that's very concerned that people will be, their children will be contaminated by such God-conscious literature or philosophy, and they have the police watching carefully. Like Hiranyakashipu had his teachers, Sunda and Amarika, very carefully looking over the children, making sure that no thought of God ever entered into their mind. And then as soon as his own child was suspected of being a cult, a victim of a cult, then immediately he was separated from the children and was sent to reform school. Although he didn't reform, and therefore he was going to be penalized. Therefore, there's quite a contrast between modern civilization and the actual standard civilization, which is explained here. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said things like, Aham Vaishnaro Budva Praninam Deham Ashitya Pranapana Samayuktva Pachamnyanam Chaturvida. I become the fire of digestion, and therefore I join with the air of life and digest the four kinds of foodstuffs. So even in modern society, people are so foolish they don't even understand what is the basic principle of even health or even happiness. Krishna says that if the fire of digestion is strong and the airs in the body are moving properly, then when we eat something, it gets digested. But modern people, they don't worry about that. They think that even if it doesn't get digested, I'll just take some pill and it'll dissolve everything. And if it doesn't dissolve, then I'll have an operation, take out the stomach because it wasn't working anyhow or whatever, and get an artificial, a plastic one. And I can change it every 10 years or so. So people are so foolish they don't even know that their basic principle of happiness, even materially speaking, is to eat something. That no one can become satisfied, I'll explain in the next verse, that unless one can eat some nice food, I'll just read this. Dwari dwari grihanam cha dadyakshata palekshubi alankritam purnar kumbhar valabhir dupatipikai. In each and every door of the residential houses, auspicious things like curd, unbroken fruits, sugarcane, and full water pots with articles for worship, incense, and candles were all displayed. Purport. The process of reception, according to the Vedic rites, is not at all dry. The reception was made not simply by decorating the roads and streets, as above mentioned, but by worshiping the Lord with requisite ingredients like incense, lamps, flowers, sweets, fruits, and other palatable edibles, according to one's capacity. All were offered to the Lord, and the remnants of the foodstuffs were distributed amongst the gathering citizens. So it was not like a dry reception of these modern days. Each and every house was ready to receive the Lord in a similar way. And thus each and every house on the roads and streets distributed such remnants of food to the citizens, and therefore the festival was successful. Without the distribution of food, no function is complete, and that is the way of Vedic culture. For instance, in the science of Ayurveda, it analyzes the body into different functioning physiological components known as the dhatus. Dhatu means which sustains. So there is what's called the rasa dhatu, which is the lymphatic system. And then when we eat food, that by tasting the food, it gives an idea to the stomach what kind of food we're about to eat. It gives some idea to the brain what kind of food we've just eaten by the sense of smell and by the sense of taste. Then the stomach prepares the necessary digestive fluids to digest the food. But as soon as we taste the food, there's some feeling of satisfaction. Just like, for instance, if one is very hungry and very weak, one can eat an apple, and just by the taste of the apple, then one feels some energy. Isn't that right? It is not that immediately the apple is digested. Just the taste gave us energy. The prana and the taste. The symptom of energy or prana in the food is the taste. So nowadays people are eating food, there's no taste. There may be some taste, but generally speaking, the taste is not very palatable. Most places, if you get an apple, which most times you don't eat apples in season anymore because no one even knows what the season is, but they more or less taste about the same as cardboard many times. They have experiments where people close their eyes and they eat a raw potato and a raw apple, and people can't tell the difference. Especially, or if you close your nose, you can't really tell the difference between a raw apple and a raw potato. But that may be physiological reasons. But the idea is that generally most of the food doesn't have very much of a taste. Nor do people worry about that. Modern people, they don't really worry about what they're eating anymore. They can hardly taste anything. So you can see they walk down the street with their lunch many times. I don't know if in America at least they do that. Probably they do that in Holland also. They walk down the street with their lunch. They're eating their lunch as they're walking down the street and talking to their friend. And it seems perfectly natural. And then afterwards, if you ask them, what have you eaten? They can't remember. Because they didn't even notice it. But the taste of the food gives us actually energy, and that's one of the primary reasons why we eat, is to get some energy. But people have become so bewildered, they don't even realize that they're eating food to get some energy. And if the food is actually digested and assimilated, then the next dhatu that's formed is called rakta. So by the first taste, one gets a little enchantment, it's a little bit invigoration. But it's not the whole picture. Just like you may meet a girlfriend, take her out on a date, but the relationship is just beginning. It's not the end of the relationship, hopefully. That's in a material analogy. So it's just the beginning of the relationship. So similarly, just by tasting the food, if we've tasted it, it's the beginning of the relationship. If we don't even get to know someone, there's no question of developing a deeper relationship. So people are not even concerned about taste nowadays, practically speaking. When I was younger, they have all this canned food. I'm sure they still have the canned food. So I could never eat it. I couldn't figure out why my parents would. I could never eat vegetables because they always wanted to buy them in a can. And I just smelled the can. And I was thinking, oh, this is terrible, or the word is abominable. But I think people still eat vegetables out of cans, right? So what kind of the vegetable was? I mean, 6 months is probably, fresh. expiry date, year 2005. And this is what people, this is the taste that people are eating. So we can imagine what kind of energy they're getting, what type of invigoration they're getting from eating the food. And then the next thing is the rakta, the blood. So when blood is strong, then one feels that's invigoration. One feels invigorated. Just like they used to say in America, iron poor blood. That one feels very tired, lethargic, lack of life. And then the next is mangsa, which is flesh. So if food is digested and assimilated, then flesh is there, which offers protection to the bones, some feeling of strength. So people, neither they get energy, nor they get invigorated, nor they get any feeling of strength. By the time someone is 50 years old in modern culture, just to turn on the television, he can't get up to do it anymore. He has to have remote control. And two people are sitting on their couch arguing with each other, who's going to turn the television on? I did it yesterday. Or who's going to take the garbage out? I remember my parents my sister and myself used to argue on whose turn it was to take the dog out or whose turn it was to take the garbage out. Because it's so demanding to walk down a flight of stairs, hold this, and to lift up the lid of the garbage can and throw the garbage in. Because people are lacking energy. So the food nowadays neither provides, nor the way people eat, provides taste, nor invigoration, nor strength. And then the next comes mangsa medas, which is somatic feeling of comfort. That's fat, which gives some comfort. So neither people feel comfortable, nor do they feel, and so many different things. It goes on and on and on as one goes deeper into the layers of the body. The food itself, when proper food is eaten and digested and assimilated, then it provides different types of nourishment to the different layers of the body, which provide different support for different types of consciousness and mentality and feelings. So in the absence of proper food, in the absence of proper assimilation and eating properly, people are insecure, undernourished, and unenlivened, uninvigorated, without any real taste in life. And people and they think they're making progress. Everything is going great. The buildings are getting bigger. Although you can't see them anymore because the smog is covering them, but we know they're there. And people are thinking they're making progress, but this is actual progress, as explained here. Nice food, especially offered to Krishna, nice scents and flowers, nice atmosphere where everyone feels protected and cared for and appreciated. So this is the atmosphere of the Veda culture. So although people may not appreciate it, that's because somehow or another they've lost touch with their real feelings, their real desires, even from the material point of view. Everyone knows everyone is striving for happiness, but how happiness will be found in modern society is quite vague. It's not very clear what is actually the standard of real happiness. But this is defined here, and we should try to appreciate it and try to maybe strive in some way in that direction. Growing flowers, growing fruits, having festivals where these things are honored. And this way people will come to appreciate the simple living, and this will help us also in higher thinking. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes.
There are also people nowadays who live on prana, so I'm just about to get many things.
Prana. There are people nowadays who only breathe air. You know some of those people?
There was a person in Mayapur who gave some explanation for this one lady who wrote the book.
He only breathes air. He doesn't eat any food. And I'm sure he's fat, right? You know, how old was he? What did you? Sure. Don't eat any food. Nothing at all. What's that?
You just take water.
Take some water on Sunday for the feast. Well. Personally, I don't believe them. But it is possible, but it's not very common. And even if there are many thousands, we're not among the very many thousands. At least I'm not. And what have they accomplished by only breathing air? Do what? And now this is how they do it, because I'm sure they're not, you know, running around the block every day. They probably live pretty simple lives, and you know, maybe they're just involved in meditation. I'm sure they're living in a place which is not very full of anxiety. You'd have to live in a very peaceful place. And from air you can get prana. So prana is the basic energy. So you can get energy at least from the air, from the sunshine, from the water. Those are the basic ingredients of life anyhow. In water you have earth, and you have water, you have all the ingredients. But I don't think it's very much applicable for most of us. Nor is that our goal in life, to just breathe air. Although it would be nice. We could probably do a lot more devotional service. But in the spiritual world, Krishna also eats food. He just doesn't breathe air. Back home, you know, you go back home to Godhead, you see everyone just sitting around breathing air. No, in the spiritual world, there are transcendental pastimes of taking prasadam. So probably for us, taking prasadam and remembering Krishna is a lot more valuable. Is a lot more valuable than if we just sat around, breathe there, and didn't do any service. As far as how to do it, if you want to, I can instruct you afterwards. We can sit around for a week and just breathe. But I think you have to worship the deities here, so. Had a very exciting life. Probably you're breathing too much. Try and cut down on your breathing. Yes.
So,
Which part of the culture are you attached? Which part you don't? Well, we don't eat fruit or flowers or. I mean, we also have the culture here, giving nice decorations to the deities, and prasadam, and flowers and incense, chanting Hare Krishna, and so that is the Veda culture. We're not, you know, spending our time riding around in our cars and honking our horns and playing our stereos and watching television. Do you miss all those things? Oh. What's that?
I see devotees need to be 20 years old and hold a sacred title.
Oh, well, that's a different thing. Well, that's probably because in the material world, people, sometimes most of the people are dying from starvation, and we're dying from eating too much. Anyhow, eating prasadam, that's generally, it's not so much our mentality. Maybe that's why we eat too much, but generally we just eat too much, that's all. Or we eat the wrong things. Sometimes, at least in some places, everything has sugar in it. And it has to be at least fried, deep fried, or else it's not palatable. So if it's deep fried and covered with sugar, then it's considered first class. So too much sugar, too much heavy food, then it becomes, one gets after a while a little difficult for the digestion to work. And therefore one feels a little tired because one can't really digest it and assimilate the food. And also we're coming from Kali Yuga, from the background where most of us didn't live Brahminical lives before we joined the movement. We weren't, you know, following four principles strictly and only engaging in pious activities. So because of that also. So we can imagine if the devotees are sick, what the people in the material world are like. You know, how much they're suffering. Yes.
I was wondering, it's a bit of a technical question, is it also part of the culture that you harvest a lot of fruits? And here you harvest fruits you like from the cook, like preserves. Is that considered
No, I don't think so. If you preserve it in the right way. But if you pickle it, pickle it, you know, make it, even that is sometimes acceptable. Fruits and things like that, sometimes there's nice ways of preserving them without adding so many different chemicals to it and coloring and putting it in some can where it interacts with the can for 3 years. Therefore, you get your daily supplement of tin by eating your preserved apples. There's nice ways of preserving. But I think generally preserves, even the Vedic, you know, when you preserve things, because we do that, it has its limits also. Not that I preserve strawberries, you know, 10 years later than we open them up. That generally preserves, you know, for a certain amount of time, you even label it, how long it's good for. Because they're generally done naturally, by natural means. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.